Hello and welcome to Columbia Evangelical Seminary's class, Writing Protocols, Punctuation, Grammar, and Academic Style. My name is Rick Walston. I'm your audio professor for this class. The year is 2005. We're in lecture number 2, the parts of speech and some other things to know. The first thing we're going to look at are the 8 parts of speech. They're commonly seen as nouns, pronouns, adjectives, verbs, adverbs, conjunctions, prepositions, and interjections. And we'll talk about each of those as we go. The first one is the noun. A noun is the name of a person, place, or thing. So the noun names things. Thus, the noun is a what word. Now, there's 2 kinds of nouns. There are proper nouns and common nouns. Now, what's interesting is recently a friend of mine called and said that he was watching the show Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? And on that show, a man was being asked a question. The question was simply, which of these 3 is the proper noun? Dog, Seattle, and truck. Well, ultimately, the man missed the answer and did not get it right. He didn't know the proper noun from the common nouns. Now, what's really interesting is this man was a Harvard graduate. Not only that, but he graduated with his bachelor's degree from Harvard with a degree in English. So it's amazing to me, and to anybody that's around writing, how many people don't know the difference between the proper nouns and common nouns. Proper nouns, we're going to take a look at that first. Nouns are used as names for unique individuals, events, or places. When they're unique individuals, events, or places, they're proper nouns, and you must capitalize it. The dog, Seattle, truck, which is the proper noun? Obviously, it is Seattle. Then the common nouns. Common nouns can be thought of as a generic noun. We don't capitalize the first letter of common nouns. For example, the words man and woman are common nouns. Thus, we do not capitalize the first letter in these words. However, the names of these 2 individuals are proper nouns, Brad and Marianne. As proper nouns, they require the uppercase of the first letter. One noun that people often have trouble with is the word gospel. Is that a proper noun or is it a common noun? Should it be capitalized? Yes and no, depending on the context. When the word is referring to one of the 4 gospels, that is Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John, then it is a proper noun and must be capitalized. If, however, the word is referring to the good news that comes through Jesus Christ, then it is a common noun and not capitalized. So it's not as easy as some may think, well, gee, you know, I don't need this instruction on when to capitalize. Sometimes you do. An example of how to use the word gospel correctly, as far as punctuation go, or as far as uppercase letters go, is the gospel of Mark, and gospel here is uppercase G, reveals the gospel, and that's a lowercase g. Some other words that students often mistake for proper nouns. Church. Unless it's referring to a specific church within a church's name, for example, the First Baptist Church, unless it's referring to a specific name, it should not have an uppercase C. Theology is another one people often will write and in term papers and whatnot, and when they get to the word theology, they capitalize it for some reason. Unless, however, the word theology is part of a larger proper noun, like the title of a degree, Doctor of Sacred Theology, for instance. Unless it's that, then it should not have the uppercase T. Biblical is another one that's often capitalized when it's nothing more than an adjective. Biblical, unless it is part of a proper noun, like, for instance, the title Doctor of Biblical Studies. That's a degree title. Then, of course, biblical would be have the uppercase B. Otherwise, it's lowercase. Now, in referring to God with pronouns, the masculine and third person pronouns, people often will capitalize the H. And that's fine for normal writing. In academic writing, however, the pronouns for God should not have uppercase H. I remember one time someone was arguing with me that he was showing respect to God by putting the uppercase H. And I told him it's not an issue of respect or disrespect. It's simply an issue of academic style and the way we do it in academic style. There was one person, in fact, who in his term paper, he had all of the various characteristics of God. Every time he referred to anything about God, he had it capitalized. But whenever he said the word Satan, or wrote the word Satan, he had it with a lowercase s. And again, he tried to say, well, I'm showing respect to God and disrespect to Satan. But that's not an issue in academic writing. You can show disrespect to Satan all you like. But as far as proper form and style of writing, proper nouns are capitalized and common nouns are not, and pronouns are not. All right. Another thing is that we do not capitalize directions like north and south. So we would write Dave traveled south with a lowercase s. However, once he got there, we would say Dave lives in the south. So when you talk about the location, it's a proper noun. When you're talking about the direction, it's a common noun. So it's difficult sometimes to know exactly, precisely, should I capitalize or should I not? How do I know? Well, here's the answer. Buy a good dictionary. Or today, most days, you can just jump on the internet and go to dictionary.com and many other dictionaries online and look it up. But that's the key. Simply look it up. Number two, the pronoun. Pronoun takes the place of a noun. Pronouns, personal pronouns, are I, me, my, mine, you, yours, he, him, she, and so on. Then there are relative pronouns, who, that, which, and what. There are indefinite pronouns, few, several, one, someone, and everyone. And there are demonstrative pronouns, this, that, those, and these. So you need to know that there are pronouns and that there are various kinds. And then there are also reflexive pronouns. For instance, myself, yourself, himself, herself, themselves. Since these are reflexive, you would not use them in a sentence by themselves. Reflexive pronouns must refer back to the subject of the sentence because the reflexive is used to reinforce the subject. That means there must be a subject to which the reflexive refers back to. For example, I hurt myself. What does the reflexive myself in the sentence refer back to? It refers back to the I. The reflexive must have a subject to refer back to, or it should not be used at all. For example, you would not say, Bob and myself attended the crusade. Why? Because the reflexive myself in the subject has no I to refer back to. If the word myself is used in a sentence, that same sentence must have the word I in it for the reflexive pronoun to refer back to. So, an example of how to use it correctly, I will go to the crusade myself. Myself refers back to I. Then there are intensive pronouns. That's the same ones, like myself and yourself. It's just intensive when it's used immediately after the subject to which it refers. For example, I myself will fix the car. I myself, that's intensive. You yourself said that the seminar started at noon. I myself think it is important to learn grammar. These are what's called intensive. Interrogative pronouns, who and what. Interrogative pronouns introduce a question, and the word interrogative means to examine by formally questioning, and that's where we get our word to interrogate, to ask. All right, so that's a quick review of the pronouns. You'll need to go back over those and get those in your thinking. The properties of nouns and pronouns. Nouns and pronouns have gender, masculine, feminine, and neuter. For instance, masculine, he, feminine, she, and neuter, it. By the way, in academic writing, don't do the he/she thing. Too many issues in political correctness have gotten into issues of academics. But in CES writing protocols, simply use the generic masculine pronoun to refer to humanity. Don't get caught up in the PC correctness when dealing with theological academic issues. Then nouns and pronouns have number. They're singular. For instance, the word Christian is singular and church is singular. However, plural is Christians and churches. Now, you must be very careful because some words are tricky. To make some nouns plural, all you do is add the S, but some words take the addition of ES. Still, other words are singular and plural as they are. For instance, deer and sheep can be used either as singular or plural. The word fruit is also tricky because it can be used either as singular or plural, or it can be changed to fruits in the plural. Personally, I don't like the word fruits. You notice in Galatians chapter 5, verse 22, it talks about the fruit of the Spirit, not the fruits of the Spirit. But how about the word data? Data is plural. You do not say the data is conclusive because the data is plural. You would say the data are conclusive. Data is plural and datum is singular, so the datum is conclusive, the data are conclusive. Here's another one, media. Media is plural, so one should not say, at least for grammatical purposes, the liberal media is to blame, because is a singular, but media is plural. The correct grammar would be the liberal media are to blame. Media, it's talking about all the kinds of media, the television, newspapers, radio, all of that is the media. Now, medium is the singular. So the medium of radio, the medium of the newspaper, but the media is referring to all of the various aspects of the media. The term media includes all forms of news. Now, there is one thing, however, when you talk about those people who are thought to have power to communicate with the spirits of the dead or with agents of another world or dimension, they are also called psychics. They often refer to themselves as mediums. Now, when you're talking about that sort of thing, then mediums is plural. It's not media. Example, the media reported on a convention for psychics, and 430 self-proclaimed mediums attended. Okay, so media, plural, mediums, plural, when it's referring to psychics. Here's another one. Criteria is plural, and criterion is singular. The criteria for the job position were, not the criteria for the job position was, because were is plural, criteria is plural, were a master's degree, 3 years experience, and a working knowledge of computer processing. However, in the singular, it would be something like this. The only criterion for the job is a master's degree, because it is a singular. And then there's index is singular, indices is plural. Again, you must have a good dictionary to figure these out sometimes, because if you don't know. Theses, here's a popular one. Most people don't know quite what to do with that in the plural. Well, theses in the plural is theses. Now, a pronoun must always agree in number with the antecedent to which it refers. An antecedent is what we call the noun that comes before the pronoun to which the pronoun refers, as understood by the context. I'll give you an example. The teacher asked the children if they were ready for the exam. Now, the pronoun is they. The antecedent is children. So here's an example of the wrong. I bought a new car, and they looks good in my driveway. Well, car is singular, and they is plural. So you wouldn't do that. You would say, I bought a new car, and it looks good in my driveway. But wait, it gets tougher. Here's another one. The group is having their meeting this Friday. Is that correct? No, that's wrong. The group is having its meeting this Friday, because there, if you said the group is having their meeting, the word there is plural, but is singular. So you can't say the group is having their, it would have to be the group is having its. Now, sometimes these collective words, well, let's hold off on that for just a second. Let's go on with another example here. Every student must hand in their paper by Friday. Now, this is often how people talk. Every student must hand in their paper by Friday, but that's incorrect. It is every student must hand in his paper by Friday, or every student must hand in her, because every student is singular, and their is plural, so you can't do that. There's no agreement there in number with the antecedent and the pronoun. Every student must hand in his or her term paper. Nouns and pronouns have inflection. An inflection is just the alteration of the form of a word by adding a letter or by adding letters or syllables to the end of the word or stem. This suffix serves to form a new word or to function as an inflectional ending, such as ness in gentleness, ing as in walking, or s as in sits. Inflection simply takes the word and changes it a little bit to show its number or its person or whatever. So inflection takes the word, for instance, fox, and turns it into foxes from singular to plural. Inflections can also change the form of the base of the word. For instance, the word speak, which is present tense, to the word spoke, which is past tense. And you see the inflection there is just the way it's spelled. It's spelled differently. Inflection indicates grammatical features such as number, person, mood, or tense. So pronouns and nouns and pronouns have inflection. Here's some more examples. He to his and him. She to her and hers, we to us and our. All of these basically are the same root meaning, but they're inflected to indicate certain aspects of grammar. Nouns and pronouns have case. There are three cases. There's the subjective case, the objective case, and the possessive case. Actually, there's more, but in English, this is really all we talk about. The subjective case does two things. It points out the subject and the predicate nominative. Again, what does the subjective case do? It points out two things. It points out the subject of the sentence, and it also points out the predicate nominative when there is one. For instance, the first one, pointing out the subject, Jesus stepped into a boat, crossed over, and came to his own town. This is showing the subject, Jesus. The predicate nominative, for instance, is Jesus is Lord. Now, the word Lord there is the predicate nominative in this sentence. Again, and then the next one, this is he. The word he is the predicate nominative. Now I'm going to discuss the predicate nominative a little closer and a little more in detail later, so I'm not going to get hung up on that. I just want you to know these two things, that the subjective case points out these two things, the subject and the predicate nominative. The objective case, there are three uses of the objective case. It points out the direct object, the indirect object, and the object of the preposition. As a direct object, the ball hit him in the face. Him is the direct object being hit. Indirect object, Bob hit the ball to him. Him now is the indirect object. Bob hit, number one, the ball, so the ball is the direct object, and it was to him, the second person in his leg, so that is the indirect object. And then, of course, the object of the preposition, to whom shall I send the letter? So the objective case points out the direct object, indirect object, and the object of a preposition. And then the third one is the possessive case. There are three uses of the possessive case. It points out possession or ownership, it points out source, and it points out relationship. Possession, ownership, Bob's bike. Bob owns the bike. This shows that Bob is the owner, the possessor. But source, it was found at the river's bottom. Now, even though it's rivers is in the possessive case, the river doesn't own or possess the bottom. It's talking about the source. And then as a relationship, Bob's wife. Again, Bob does not own his wife. So it's not a possession. It's not an ownership. It's showing here relationship. Now, compound nouns and pronouns have case. When you have two or more nouns or pronouns in a sentence joined by a coordinating conjunction, they are called compound. For example, Jeff took my wife and me to dinner Friday night. Thus, wife and me is compound. That's the compound subject. Be careful to use the correct pronoun when you have a compound noun. For example, when you have a compound noun or pronoun. For example, some are in the habit of saying things like, Jeff took my wife and I to dinner last Friday night. I got an email just the other day from a friend who said, would you and your wife like to go out to dinner with my wife and I? But you see, you can tell if you're saying it correctly or not by simply removing the first part of the compound and say it like this. Jeff took I to dinner Friday night. See, that doesn't work. You wouldn't talk that way. In the pronoun should not be in the subjective case, which would be I, but rather, in this example, it should be in the objective case, which would be me. Jeff took me to dinner Friday night. Thus, the correct compound way to write it is, Jeff took my wife and me to dinner Friday night, and my friend who wrote me an email and said, would you like to go to dinner with my wife and me, is how he should have written it. All right. The adjective. Adjective modifies a noun or pronoun. The adjective is a what kind of word. It describes quality. Examples of pronoun of adjectives are fast, loud, purple, pretty, dumb, smart, hilarious. So that's pretty simple. Adjectives are a what kind of word. It describes a quality, and they modify nouns and pronouns. All right, next we're going to cover the verb. Verbs denote an action or a state of being. Those are the two things that verbs denote, action or state of being. There are two types of verbs, transitive and intransitive. The transitive denotes the action, and the intransitive denotes the state of being. Transitive. A transitive verb takes an object. For example, Moses struck. Moses struck what? Moses struck the rock. Thus, something has to receive the action of a transitive verb. However, the intransitive verb does not, in fact, cannot take an object. Examples. The verb to be has various variations. For instance, to be can be is, am, are, was, were, has been, and shall be. These are all variations or inflections, if you will, of the verb to be. The intransitive verb is never followed by an objective case, by the objective case. Thus, there's no object. For instance, I will be late. Be is the verb, and late is the adverb. Now, notice late is not receiving the action of be. It's an adverb, not an object, and it's relating what I will be. It's showing a state of action, or excuse me, it's showing the state of being of the word I. Then the book is good. Again, good is not the object of the verb is, because there is no object of a intransitive verb. Good here is the adjective modifying book. So that's the two things you need to know about the verb, that there's transitive and intransitive. Transitive is an action that receives an object, and intransitive is a verb that does not take an object. And then the adverb. Adverbs modify verbs, adjectives, and sometimes other adverbs. Often people tell me adverbs modify verbs. Well, that's true, but that's not all. So remember this, adverbs modify a lot more than just verbs. The adverbs answer the question why, or excuse me, adverbs, the adverb answers the questions how, when, why, and where. Often adverbs end in ly, but not all words that end in ly are adverbs. So just because you see a word that ends in ly doesn't mean it's necessarily an adverb. Sometimes adjectives end in ly as well. And then the conjunction. There are coordinating, subordinating, and correlative conjunctions. So coordinating conjunctions include and, but, or, yet, for, nor, and so. Coordinating means of equal rank. Subordinating conjunctions are after, although, as, because, before, even, or even if, even though, if, since, and many more. This list is simply not complete. Subordinating conjunction, subordinating means that they are not of equal rank. And then there's the correlative conjunctions, either or, neither nor. Examples of sentences with correlative conjunctions, either you or he may go, or neither you nor he may go. Never mix these. Here's an example of a bad mix, neither you or he may go. So you want to keep those straight and not mix the correlative conjunctions. The preposition. Prepositions show relationship. There are more than 100 prepositions in English. And like I said earlier, there are certain prepositions that we use most often. Of, to, and in are some of the are among the 10 most frequently used words in English. Not just prepositions, but all words. The preposition is always followed by the objective case, that is, an object. For example, Jesus hung on the cross. Jesus is the subject. On is the preposition. Cross is the object that Jesus hung on. Now, some prepositions can be subordinating conjunctions. For example, the word after can be a preposition or it can be a subordinating conjunction depending on how it's used. If I wrote after me, you may come, then that is a preposition, after me. But if I wrote after I go to the store, then it's being used as a subordinating conjunction. Now the context is the thing that determines what the how the word is being used. So sometimes some, not all, some prepositions can be used as subordinating conjunctions. Now, often people have a difficult time knowing when to use who or whom. But in regard to prepositions with who and whom, it becomes rather simple. Just remember this, that if you're looking for either the word whom or who, and if that word that you're looking for, you're not sure which one it is, if it comes after a preposition, it is always whom. Example, about is a preposition. About whom, above whom, before whom, between whom. For instance, if somebody said, there's a fight between two guys, and you were asking between whom, you wouldn't say between who, you would say between, because between is a preposition, and then whom, because whom is in the objective case. With whom, for whom, to whom, by whom. Again, if you have a preposition before the who or whom is always the correct word following the preposition. So you would say, who said what to whom? So you got the who in the subjective case, doing the action, who said what, and then the preposition to, and what follows that is whom. And who hit whom? When you're breaking up a Scrabble between two little kids, you would ask who hit whom, not who hit who, but who hit whom. The object of the preposition and the object of the verb is always in the objective case, and the pronoun whom is always in the objective case, and who is always in the subjective case. Now, for years we've been told that you should never end a sentence with a preposition. I won't take the time to read all of this, but let me tell you quickly that basically that rule came out of Latin, and it has no legitimate or logical reason to apply to English grammar. So you may, in fact, end sentences with prepositions without that being a problem. In fact, Winston Churchill is reported to have said, "That is the kind of nonsense up with which I will not put." I think he made his point very well by showing how awkward this sentence would be if he did not end it with a preposition. The sentence would have been far better had he said, "That is the kind of nonsense that I will not put up with." But if he did that, then he would be ending the sentence in the preposition. So basically what you should know about the never end a sentence in a preposition rule is this. People out there believe it's a real rule. It's not. But people believe that. So if you're writing an article for a magazine, and that company happens to believe that that's a rule, then you want to follow that rule. Another thing, too, is if you go ahead and break the rule because you know it's not really a rule, it's really merely a suggestion, and so you end sentences with prepositions, people who read your work may think that you just simply don't know any better. So you want to be careful. I would say try not to end sentences and prepositions. If you must because it's too awkward otherwise, then go ahead and do it. Number 8, the interjection. Interjections are uncommon in formal academic writing, so you're probably not going to have this problem. The only time that they appear typically is in direct quotations. The interjection is an odd word because it often stands alone. They express emotion or surprise. Often they're followed by exclamation points. Examples in sentences: ouch, that hurt. Oh no, I forgot my wife's birthday. Hey, stop that. Wow, I won the lottery. So these are interjections, as I said, you're not going to probably be using them because they show emotional outbursts, and emotional outbursts are not acceptable in academic writing anyway, but it's good for you to know what they are, even though you may not be using them in your writing for CES. Now, here are some other things that you should know. The article. Some grammars list the article as a separate part of speech. Others see it as an adjective. We're not going to list it as a part of speech, but we'll simply follow the custom of seeing it as an adjective. There are two forms of the article, the indefinite article and the definite article. The indefinite article is a and an, and the definite article is the. Now, what does this mean, indefinite and definite? Well, if I said a duck flew into my house, it could be any duck. It could be one of a million ducks, a duck. I don't know, just a duck. But if I said the duck flew into my house, then we're talking about a specific duck. It's a definite duck. And that's the whole point of indefinite and definite. Now, when do you use a or an? Use the indefinite article a before words in which the first sound is a consonant, a sounded h, or a long u. Now, notice that word sound is italicized. You should actually underline it, highlight it, or something, because the point is that it's the sound of a consonant. It's also a sounded h or a long u. Examples: a peach, a dog, a deficit, a painting, a man, a boy, a girl, a cabinet. But notice this below. It says a united nation, a union. Now, some people say when you have what follows the indefinite article is a vowel, then you need the word an. But here, a united nation, a union. These are vowels. The u is a vowel, but it's a long u. So it's the sound we're looking for, not the actual consonant or vowel. Add the floatable n before words in which the first sound is a vowel sound, except long u, and before words beginning with the silent h. For example, an apple, an envelope, an owner, an hour, an hour. So, or an unnecessary word. So if it's a vowel sound, then you put the n with the a. Often people have problems knowing whether to use A or AN when listing their abbreviated master's degree titles. For instance, should it be AN MDiv or AM Div? Sometimes people see the abbreviated form but still pronounce the whole word in their mind, and this causes confusion. Thus, one might place the A before the MDiv if in their mind they're actually saying the whole title of the degree, Master of Divinity, because you would say A Master of Divinity, you wouldn't say AN Master of Divinity. So when they abbreviate it, then they put the A in front of it. However, when it is abbreviated, it is to be pronounced as it is abbreviated. So MDiv is pronounced as M-E-M-D-I-V. Note the E sound as you pronounce the M. Thus, when it is abbreviated, it should be N-MDiv. But when it's not abbreviated, it is A Master of Divinity. The same with any other master's degree, an M-A and an M-S. The articles A or AN and THE should be repeated when referring to two separate persons or objects, but it should not be repeated when referring only to one person or object. Examples: the company employs a graphics designer and a computer programmer. This is two persons. However, if we wrote the company employs a graphics designer and computer programmer, this is only one person. Either a man or a woman may apply. Two people. Notice this one. This is interesting. For sale, a maple and a mahogany desk. This sentence is speaking of two desks. But if we wrote for sale, a maple and mahogany desk, this sentence is speaking of one desk made from two different kinds of wood. But when two or more nouns refer to the same person, the article should not be repeated. For instance, Jesus is a prophet, priest, and king. Robert Morse became well known as a pastor and professor. So that's a little bit of information on the articles, the definite and indefinite articles, and when to use the a and the an. Verbals, participles, gerunds, and infinitives. These are fun. Are you ready? Now, I should remind you, have you been keeping your vocabulary list up to date? Because you're running into a lot of terms that you're going to need to list on your vocabulary list to hand in. The verbals, they are participles, gerunds, and infinitives. The term verbal indicates that a word is based on a verb and therefore expresses action or state of being. There are three types of verbals. There's participles, gerunds, and infinitives. Let's look at the participles. The participle is a verbal adjective. That's the key words, a verbal adjective. Participles are words that combine characteristics of verbs with those of adjectives. Example, the flying squirrel jumped from tree to tree. Now, your first thought may be that the word flying was a verb. However, in this phrase, flying describes or modifies squirrels, so it acts as an adjective, a verbal adjective, which is called a participle. The term verbal indicates that the participle is based on a verb and therefore expresses action or a state of being, but is not a verb. Another example, the caring man received an award. Some might think that the word caring is a verb. It's not, not in this sentence. It is the participle acting as an adjective that modifies man. Note, if a participial phrase begins the sentence, then the participial phrase must be followed by a comma. Example, walking 15 miles, comma. What is walking here? It is the participle. Walking 15 miles, participial phrase. He finally found the car. Note well that walking in this sentence is not the verb. The participle walking, combined with the words 15 miles, serves to modify the pronoun he. Found in this sentence is the verb. Thus, in this sentence, walking 15 miles is a participial phrase that begins the sentence, and it must have a comma after it. Now, gerunds. Now, we just said a participle is a verbal adjective. A gerund is a verbal noun. Gerunds end in ing just like participles do and function as nouns. Example, everyone liked Mike's singing. Notice that singing in this sentence is not the verb. Liked is the verb. Singing is acting as a noun. It is a verbal noun, that is, a gerund. Remember, a noun is the name of a person, place, or thing, and singing, in our example sentence, is the thing that people liked. The term verbal indicates that a gerund is based on a verb and therefore expresses action or state of being. Since a gerund functions as a noun, it occupies some positions in the sentence, some same positions in a sentence that a noun would ordinarily occupy. For example, subject, direct object, and object of the preposition. Gerund as a subject. Napping is my favorite pastime. Gerund as a direct object. They liked Mike's singing. Gerund as object of the preposition. The judge fined him for lying. If a gerundive phrase begins a sentence, it is never followed by a comma, which is contrary to the participial phrase, which is always followed by the comma. When a gerund acts as a noun and is the subject of the sentence, it is not followed by the comma. Why? The subject of the sentence should never be separated from its verb by a comma. Example, walking is good exercise for everyone. So walking is a noun here, is the verb, and you don't separate the subject from the verb. And then the infinitives. This is the to verb. Take the word to and combine it with any verb root, and that is an infinitive. For example, to run, to jump, to eat, to talk, to swim. These are all infinitives, to and any verb stem. For a long time, grammars and grammarians taught that you should never split the infinitive. It's a big thing, never split the infinitive. But this rule, like the never end a sentence in a preposition, came about in the 18th century when English grammars were following Latin. In Latin, infinitives are one word, so it's impossible to split them. Greek, like Latin, provides us an example of a one-word infinitive, luein, which means to loose. So it might be helpful if you were to think of infinitive as one word. For example, to run might be thought of as to run, all one word. To write would be thought of as to write. When thought of in this fashion, it will help you not to split, the infinitive. However, this rule, never to split the infinitive, is just about dead these days. Nonetheless, there are many traditionalists who still see the split infinitive as an error. So your writing and education may appear suspect to people if you split your infinitives. Now, you may split your infinitives if you desire, if you have a reason for that. In fact, there's no real grammatical English grammatical rule why you shouldn't. It's just that we've picked it up from Latin, and it's an old rule whose time is really come and gone, but there are still a few people who hang on to it. Here's a few examples of split infinitives. To really swim fast. Well, where's the split? To swim, again, remember to and the verb. So the word really splits up the infinitive. To better understand. Well, what's the verb? Understand. What's the infinitive? To understand. To verb. So to better understand the Bible, take some classes in exegesis. Here, the infinitive to understand is split by the word better. So why do we have this rule? Well, as you can see, the infinitive is not one word in English, it's two. And so it really has no logic for it other than it was drawn over from the Latin. Basically, the same thing that you should know about never ending a sentence in a preposition rule applies to the never split an infinitive rule. Know this. There are people out there who think it's a rule, and if you split your infinitives, they're going to think that you don't know any better. So sometimes it's important not to split it, not because it's wrong, but simply because you don't want to look like you don't know any better. All right, dropping down now to the cases. There is the subjective case, the objective case, and the possessive case. The two main things about the subjective case, well, first of all, I should tell you the subjective case is also sometimes called the nominative case. You'll need to know that word because there's a thing called the nominative predicate that's important to know. And that means subjective predicate because it's both subjective and nominative are the same, basically the same synonymous word. The two main things about the subjective case are what the subjective case does. First, it identifies the subject, and second, it identifies the predicate nominative. So, the subjective, also called nominative case, points out the subject of the sentence. Jesus stepped into a boat, crossed over, and came to his own town. In this sentence, Jesus is the subject. He is the subject, but his name is in the subjective case because he is the subject of the sentence. The subject is the person or thing doing the action of the verb. So when a noun or a pronoun is the subject of the sentence, it is said to be in the subjective or nominative case. The subjective or nominative case also points out the predicate nominative. Now, we must learn what the predicate nominative is. First, it's important to know what the term predicate means. Predicate is one of the two main constituents of a sentence, modifying the subject. Remember? Thus, it predicates or tells something about the subject. So if you use the word predicate and think it tells something about, that'll work pretty well for you. Example, was God is the predicate in the sentence, the word was God. In this sentence, the predicate tells us what the word is. Thus, it predicated to us or told us something about the word. A predicate nominative is a noun or pronoun that follows the intransitive verb, the linking verb, such as the word is, or one of its inflections, is, are, be, am, was, were. Now, remember that? The predicate nominative is a noun or pronoun that follows the intransitive verb. Well, the linking verb, actually. When a noun or a pronoun follows a linking verb, that noun or pronoun is called a predicate nominative. It tells us something about, it predicates something about the subject of the sentence. But the predicate nominative remains in the subjective or nominative case, thus the name predicate nominative. In the sentence, Jesus is Lord, Lord is the predicate nominative. Lord tells us something about Jesus, or it predicates something to us about Jesus. So the noun Lord is the predicate nominative. Thus, if I answer the phone and someone says, is Rick there? I would not say, this is me. See, the linking verb is what has to follow. A linking verb has to be in the subjective case, but the word me is objective. So the noun or pronoun following the linking verb is must always be in the nominative or subjective case. The third person, the personal third person masculine pronoun that is in the subjective case is he. Therefore, I would answer the question, is Rick there, with this is he, not this is me. Let's recap. The noun or pronoun that follows the linking verb is called the predicate nominative. Now we're shifting to the objective case. There are three uses of the objective case: as the direct object, as the indirect object and as the object of the preposition. First as the direct object. I hit him. Him is in the objective case because it is the direct object of the verb hit. Direct hit. Direct object. And then the indirect object. I hit the ball to him. So what's the direct object here? It is ball. That's the thing that's been hit. And then to him is the indirect object. Him is the is in the objective case in the sentence because it is the indirect object of the verb hit. The ball, as I said, is the direct object. And then the object of a preposition. Example, I said that it was just between him and me. Both him and me is in the objective case. People often say, it's just between he and I. Well, you wouldn't say he and I because you're looking for the object of the preposition, and the words and the pronoun he and the pronoun I are always in the subjective case. You have to find the pronouns in the objective case because you're looking for the object of the preposition. So both he and him and me is in the objective case because they are objects of the preposition between. That's where you come up with it. Thus, it is never correct to say just between he and I. The pronouns he and I, as I said, are in the subjective case, and the object of the preposition must always be in the objective case. Another example, I was just thinking of her. The pronoun her is in the objective case, and it is used here because it is the object of the preposition of. Thus, we would not say I was just thinking of she. Then the possessive case. This means that the word shows possession, source, or relationship. We talked briefly about that earlier. You express the possessive case generally by adding the apostrophe and the letter S. For example, the genitive of let me throw another word out for you to have to learn. Possessive case is also called the genitive case. The genitive of possession, that is Bob's car. Bob owns or possesses the car. Genitive of source. The wrecked ship was lifted from the river's bottom. River's bottom shows source, not ownership. Genitive of relationship. Sue is Rick's wife. Rick is in the possessive case here because Sue is his in a relationship sense, not in an ownership sense. When a name already ends in an S, you still add an apostrophe and the letter S to put it into a possessive case. Please take the time to learn this topic in Turabian. You're going to have to look that up in Turabian. But an example, that is Bob Jones's car. Notice it ends in an S, but you still add apostrophe S. However, there are two notable exceptions to this rule, and they are the name of Jesus and the name of Moses. You do not add the apostrophe and the letter S to show possession on the names of Jesus or Moses. You simply only add the apostrophe. So the Jesus' disciples preached the gospel. Moses' rod turned into a snake. Making plural possessives, you add S apostrophe. So, to make a word plural possessive, you place the apostrophe after the letter S. Here's an example of a singular possessive. That is the dog's food. Dog, D-O-G apostrophe S. This is one dog. Example of plural possessive, that is the dog's food. D-O-G-S apostrophe. So this is more than one dog. Simple plural, dogs' food or dog's food? I would say dog's food, even if it's plural, not dogs'. Simple plural, how do you make a word or name plural without making it possessive? This is interesting. Typically, you simply add an S at the end. Book becomes books, no apostrophe. All we're trying to do is find the simple plural, not the possessive case. Just plural. Table becomes tables, car becomes cars, computer becomes computers. Too often people think that as soon as you add the S at the end of the word, then you must include an apostrophe. Simple plural, however, is just the addition of the S, and only when you wish to indicate possessive case or genitive case do you add the apostrophe with the S. An interesting side note about simple plurals is that often people will write a family's name in the plural, and they mistakenly turn it into a possessive. For example, of wrong, the Walstons went on vacation to Disneyland. Well, it isn't the Walston possessive, it's the Walston plural. So you just simply say the Walstons, with an S on the end, no apostrophe, went on vacation to Disneyland. This sentence is attempting to show that multiple family members named Walston went to Disneyland. I often see family names on signs on people's homes or the family name on a nameplate on the front door, and almost every time they mess this up and they put an apostrophe S with the last name. instead of just the other, just the S. The other day, my wife and I were walking through a local neighborhood, and I saw a sign on a house that read the Smiths, apostrophe S. Now, that would be one Smith. So that would be like Joe Smith's house. It's not plural possessive, it's just singular possessive. I have seen others, including the Johnsons and the Petersons, with this apostrophe S. When there is an apostrophe S, the name is not pluralized. Rather, it makes it singular possessive. On the nameplates, the family's name should be simple plural, and thus it should be the Smiths with no apostrophe, the Johnsons, the Petersons, no apostrophe, and so on. Now, pronouns have person, first, second, and third person. Pronouns can be in first person, second person, or third person. First person is when one is referring to oneself. I went to the store. Here are some personal first person pronouns. I, me, my, mine, we, us, our, and ours are all first person personal pronouns because each of them are references by the speaker to himself or to his own group. So it can be plural or it can be singular. I is singular, we is plural, but they're still the first person. So they refer back to the speaker. Second person is when you are speaking directly to someone else. Example, you ought to go to the store. You, your, and yours are all second person personal pronouns because they are speaking directly to someone. The third person is when one is speaking about someone. One of my students once called this the gossip person, because you're not talking to somebody, you're not talking about yourself, you're talking about someone else. He went to the store. Third person. He, him, his, she, hers, hers, they, them, their, theirs, it, and its are all third person personal pronouns because they are speaking about someone or something else. All right. Do not shift persons. When writing, do not shift persons. Inexperienced writers often shift persons and thereby confuse the reader, making it hard to understand to whom the writer is referring. Example of shifting persons. This is actually taken from a student's paper. This is what he wrote. There are three dimensions within every man's sphere of influence: when you work, where you live, and where you play. Together, they form the basis for all of our contacts with other humans. Now, let's look at this a little closer. There are three dimensions within every man's, that's third person, because he's talking about somebody, sphere of influence: where you, that's second person, because he's talking directly to you, where you work, and where you live, and where you play. Together, they form the basis for all of our, that's first person because he's talking about himself or his own group, all of our contacts with other humans. Okay, so you have to ask, is the writer here talking about other people, or is he talking about you, or is he talking about himself? How do you correct, this is how to correct in third person throughout, and we're going to only use, in academic writing, you're only to use third person anyway. So to take this sentence and or sentence, these sentences and fix them, you would put them all in third person. This is what it would sound like. There are three dimensions with every man's sphere of influence: where he works, where he lives, and where he plays. Together, they form the basis for all of his contacts with other humans. You can correct it into second person and put your. You can't do that in academic writing, but you could if you wanted to just fix it and you wanted to put it in a popular level writing. And you can also correct it and put it into first person, and then you're referring to yourself the entire time. But in academic writing, as I said, you're going to be writing in third person, not in first or second person. All right. Then, personal pronouns and their cases. Look at this. See this table here. What I want you to do, we're not going to read over this, but what I want you to do is I want you to either photocopy this or write it out on a flashcard and learn this. You have to memorize this. For instance, the first one is masculine and feminine, first person, singular, first person, I, me, my, mine. And you have to see that the person, the subjective case, the objective form of that is me, possessive case of that, and the adjective is my, and the pronoun of the possessive case is mine. You have to learn and memorize this case table. All right? When to use who and whom? We talked about this a little bit earlier. If the pronoun ends in M, it's always in the objective case. Note the words him, them, and whom, always in the subjective case. So you would say, of whom are you speaking? The way we normally talk, we say, who are you talking about? But really it's, whom are you talking about? Or about whom are you talking? In fact, let's do the next couple, there's four sentences here, and I want you to correct or circle the correct pronouns. Who or whom are you speaking about? Well, it would be whom. Because the word about is a preposition, you could reverse this sentence a little bit and ask it this way. Are you speaking about him or he? You wouldn't say, are you speaking about he? You would say, are you speaking about him? Notice there's an M on the end of him, there's an M on the end of whom. The minute you can figure out how to do this, to reverse the sentence and use him or he, then you go, if it's a he, then you would go who. If it's a him, then you would use whom. So, who or whom robbed the bank? You wouldn't say, him robbed the bank. You would say, he robbed the bank. So it's who. You painted the house for who or for whom? You painted the house for him, you painted the house for he. It's him, so you would go with whom. Who or whom, shall I say, is calling? In the old, we've all seen this probably on television or movies, some old movie, where somebody rings the doorbell at a castle and somebody opens, the butler opens the door and he says, and whom shall I say is calling? Well, that's incorrect English because whom doesn't call. You wouldn't say him is calling. You would say he is calling. So it would be who shall I say is calling. All right, we've arrived now to the exercise in this lecture. And happily for you, I suppose, there's only one exercise this time, not two. I want you to turn off the tape and do the exercise and then come back and I will give you the answers and then you can check your score. So go ahead and do that now. Turn off the tape and do your exercise. All right, we're looking at the answers for the exercise from lecture number two. You were to underline each pronoun. Questionable pronoun, I should say. If a pronoun is used incorrectly, correct it and write in the blank the case that it should be in. Number one, I wouldn't put up with it if I was him. That would change the him to he and the was to were. We haven't talked about the subjunctive mood yet. We're going to get into that later, but that's what the was to were would be. So it is, I wouldn't put up with it if I were he, subjective case. Number two, he shot at Frank and me while we were hunting, objective case. She took Mom and me to work, objective case. Who, shall I say, is calling, subjective case. He drove my wife and me to the mall, objective case. It was she who stole third base. Now, I'm guessing that this caught some of you. Just drop off the it was part, and what do you have? She stole third base. Or her stole third base. You would say she. So you would underline the her, put she, and then it's the subjective case. Frank knew whose it was. Whose, of course, is the problem. It's not spelled that way. That's just a contraction. That would be who is. You want W-H-O-S-E, and that's possessive case. Number eight, whom are you talking with? Or whom are you taking with you? Objective case. Number nine, is that car yours? And of course, yours, you need to remove the apostrophe, and that's a possessive case. Number 10, the faculty is having its meeting, possessive case. That is her. Actually, it would be that is she. Remember this part, remember the linking verb is, what follows the linking verb must be in the subjective case, and her is objective, she is subjective, so it's that is she in the nominative or subjective case. Number 12, Frank and I were there, subjective case. Number 13, everyone is doing his thing. Everyone is doing her thing. So you have to have either his or her, or you can have that combination his slash her, possessive case. 14, isn't that theirs? Just remove the apostrophe and it's possessive case. Jane and she did it. Again, just the compound subjects sometimes confuse people. So again, drop the first part of the compound. You wouldn't say her did it, you would say she did it. And that's the subjective case. 16, Arizona is known for its sunsets. And of course, remove the apostrophe S because that's a contraction for it is. What you want is just ITS, and that's possessive case. 17, Mark, Bob, and I were the first ones on the scene, subjective case. 18, she yelled at whom? Not who, at whom, objective case. And then who shot Frank, not whom shot Frank, subjective case, who shot Frank. And then 20, me and him jumped off the cliff. Well, this is kind of a fun one. It's I and he jumped off the cliff, but then we don't talk that way. We prefer the other person before us, so it would ultimately be he and I jumped off the cliff. 21. Frank and I left before 9 p.m., subjective case. Oh, did I tell you 20 is subjective case? He and I, subjective case. And then 21, Frank and I, subjective case. 22, do you want to go to dinner with my wife and me? Objective case. 23, the staff is holding its annual meeting in March, possessive case. Its, I-T-S, no apostrophe. 24, this secret is just between you and me, objective case. And then finally, it was he, not it was him, because was is the linking verb. What comes after the linking verb is always in the subjective case. The subjective case for the personal pronoun for the masculine third person is he, not him. All right. Again, as I said in the end of lecture, at the end of exercises one, if you've gotten a 90% on this or better, go to lecture three. If you haven't, you need to go back over this material and learn it. Get it down to where you're doing 90% or better, and then move on to lecture number three. I'll see you in lecture three.